My bad luck started just before Christmas 1985, but at the time, as so often happens, it seemed like good luck. I had graduated from West Point, just in time to join the final fighting in the rice paddies of Vietnam. Returning with a chest full of medals, a few earned, most routine, I married Nancy Macon, a girl from Maryland whom I'd been dating whenever I found myself with stateside duty. We had spent the first 3 years of married life in the Panama Canal Zone, where I had the shameful task of watching as Jimmy Carter gave away that marvel of engineering to the Panamanians. My father, a colonel in the Army Reserve and a noted hero in World War II, called it mildly the most traitorous act of any American since Aaron Burr. And believe me, considering what Aaron Burr had done to our family, as well as our nation in the early 1800s, that was a savage indictment. It was in Panama that I mastered Spanish, which led to further assignments south of the border, and in Argentina, Chile, and especially Guatemala, learning firsthand about communist subversion on our doorstep. I was never gung-ho in my work against the Reds. That's not my style. I don't like to be out front unless war's been declared and I'm in charge of troops. But no one had greater aversion to communism than I did, after the butchery I'd seen in Nam and the cruel behavior in Guatemala. I'd never known whether it was my familiarity with Latin American communism or my Spanish that accounted for the unexpected promotion, but on 10 December 1985, I received orders to leave my duty station in Cartagena, Colombia, where we were trying to stanch the flow of cocaine into the States, and report to the Pentagon. Nancy rejoiced at what she called a long overdue assignment, not only because it meant a promotion, which I needed if I was ever going to make colonel, but also because it allowed me to rejoin her in Washington, where she had established our permanent home. I appreciated the new job because I would be working with men who had been in my class at the Point or on duty with me in Nam. My duties were well matched to my experience, liaison with the various military commissions from South and Central America nations, anti-communism in general, and exciting duty with Vice President Bush's Special Task Force on Drug Smuggling. I met Bush only a couple of times, always in a crowd of officers, but from my earliest days in Colombia, I'd had a favorable opinion of what he was trying to do. And then, just before Christmas, I was suddenly handed the exciting news. "Star, an opportunity like this doesn't reach down to tap a major very often. You're Spanish and all, or maybe it's your strong record in Guatemala. Anyway, they want you for a stint at the National Security Council." "Am I qualified?" "The Army wants you to go, demands that you go. Too damn many Navy and Marine types over there."
"My duties?"
"Cloak and dagger. Whoever knows."
He was a 2-star general, and he half saluted before I did.
"Keep your nose clean this time, Star. We want you back. Men like you are too precious to lose."
His last words spoiled the good news, because they reminded both him and me that my promotion to lieutenant colonel had been sidetracked. Normally, an Army officer, if he's good, expects regular promotion up to the rank of lieutenant colonel. The real weeding out occurs in the jump from light chicken to full chicken. As my West Point bunkmate, Zach McMaster, once said in his poetic way, "Any asshole can make light colonel. It takes a real man to handle the next leap." He had left the service after only 2 years, for it had become clear that because of his outspoken manner, he would never hack it. My promotion had been held up twice because of an incident in Chile. Information I was picking up on the street, where I moved about in civilian clothes, led me to believe that one of our clandestine exercises was bound to backfire, allowing a gang of real murderers to sneak behind the American flag while they continued their dirty games. I protested in an embassy meeting, failed to get attention, and sat down to write a forceful memorandum. My grandfather, having undergone 2 messy divorces in which his ardent letters betrayed him, had summarized his experience in a pithy command. Do right and fear no man. Don't right and fear no woman. Forgetting half of this, I drafted a memo that turned out to make my superiors look bad. Infuriated, they had blocked my advancement. Zach, who had turned to law after his non-productive fling with the Army, had enrolled at Columbia Law, graduated high, served as clerk to Justice Byron White of the Supreme Court, and gone on to become one of Washington's street-smart geniuses who know where the bodies are buried. But if he did a lot of manipulating, he also did much pro bono work. When my promotion was blocked by the bad vibes from Chile, he advised me, Star, if you move to another command, keep a low profile and do a superior job. Then not even your enemies will be able to hold you back. My assignment to the NSC proved him right. But his urgent phone call this morning put an end to that strategy. Star, old buddy, you're in serious trouble. How do you know? A Washington lawyer is supposed to know everything. Like what? The Senate Committee on the Iran deal wants to interrogate you. You'll be notified today. Zach, I've had nothing to do with Iran. The angle isn't Iran. It's the Contras. Suddenly, my mouth went dry. For the Contra affair was much different from the Iranian, and this time I could not paint myself as Lily White. There was, after all, the Tres Toros affair, about which rumors had begun to circulate, and I would not feel easy being interrogated about that. You better come on over,